Dennis. He gave us some excitement.
I call to order the City of Atascadero Planning Commission meeting of Tuesday, November 16th, 2010. Commissioner Colomarino, would you lead us in a pledge to our flag?
Yes.
Please face the flag, put your hand over your heart, and join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please, Annette.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Present.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Present.
Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Bence?
Present.
Chairperson Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Do I have a motion for approval of the agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
We have a first by Vice Chairperson Bence, second by Commissioner Sturdivant. Roll call, roll call, please. Thank you.
Vice Chairperson Bence?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Thank you. Okay, this portion of our meeting is reserved for public comment, and it is those individuals wishing to address the commission on something that is not on the agenda this evening, but over which the commission has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes. You can come to the podium. Please let us know your name and your address, and we may decide to agendize something for a future. Second by Commissioner Colomarino. Roll call, please.
Vice Chairperson Bence?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Thank you. All right, and we're on to our public hearing.
Good evening, Chairperson Moreno and fellow planning commissioners. Tonight, the first item, is PLN 2010-1386, a true mover permit for 8455 Santa Rosa Road in Atascadero. The applicant has requested the removal of one 50-inch valley oak tree located in front of Residence N at the residential care facility. Certified arborist has determined that the oak tree is in decline and creates a potential hazard for the residents and driveway. The project is located, off of Santa Rosa Road. Its general plan designation is single-family residential, SFR. Its zoning district is a residential single-family, RSFY. There is currently an existing CUP for the use for the residential care home. So that is the reason why we're bringing this to the Planning Commission tonight. Normally, a true removal permit is not necessary for unless there's a construction activity going on in a single-family residential neighborhood. The 50-inch valley oak, as stated before, is in a planter in front of Unit N. The tree has been impacted by construction over the years, and the tree is in decline and it's in poor condition. Staff went ahead and took a look at the tree initially because the applicant came in and requested an emergency tree removal permit. Staff went ahead and took some photos of the tree and made a determination that we really needed a second opinion in regards to what residential care facility, you know, the residents there are elderly or another, so they require residential care. It is located along the main entryway, and both the city arborist and Witz Turn Tree Care determined that the tree is of high hazard, and both of them had determined that the tree needs to be removed. There's a picture of the tree at the bottom. It's visible root decay at the base of the trunk, and there's visible pruning in many of the areas of the tree. Permit fees are not charged for removal of hazardous and or dead trees, and mitigation is required for non-emergencies per our native tree ordinance. Again, the city arborist made a determination that the applicant should go through the Planning Commission for the tree removal permit process, and that's why the applicant is here tonight. Section 9.11.105 of the tree removal states that as a condition of approval, the tree removal permit shall be conditioned by one or more of the following methods: either plant replacement trees on site, the payment of fee of the tree replacement fund, or establishment of conservation easements. The applicant shall replant 8 5-gallon native trees on site or pay approximately $416.67 in fees. I spoke with the applicant on Friday, and since the parcel is very large, the applicant will be replanting on site. So in order to consider the tree removal, at least one of the required findings must be made. And based on the two arborist reports, the tree is dead, diseased, or injured beyond reclamation, as certified by the tree condition report from an arborist. It is a staff recommendation that the Planning Commission adopt PC Resolution 2010-0023 to approve the request to remove one 50-inch hazardous valley oak tree subject to conditions of approval. And with that, I open it up to your questions.
On this, and so I am not going to recuse myself for that reason.
Okay.
No ex parte.
None.
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 Yes. I went and I looked at the tree. It is what it is, as described by the arborist. If it were on my property, I'd let it live for another 50 years till it died of old age, but it's not on my property, so I felt the arborist accurately described its appearance.
Thank you. Do we have questions of staff? No questions. I know we have the applicant here. Does the applicant wish to speak at all? Okay. Is there anyone from the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close that public comment, and I'll bring it back to the commission for either a motion or if there's any discussion.
Madam Chair, I move that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution PC 2010-0023 to allow the removal of one hazardous live oak totaling 50 inches DBH subject to the conditions of approval.
Second.
With a motion by Vice Chairperson Bence and a second by Commissioner Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Vice Chairperson Bence?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Colmarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
And Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Thank you. Okay, Commissioner Schmidt.
Second item, and I've noticed that the pilch that I know is in the audience, so I'm going to have to recuse myself on this item. Thank you.
All right. Director, is there somebody that can direct Commissioner Schmidt on where to retire to?
Yeah, I'll take you in room 5 and you can listen on the radio.
Quarantine, right?
Okay, and so now we are on to our public hearings. And why don't we just, we'll just need to do the one. Let me quickly do ex parte on number 3. Do we have any ex parte?
None.
None?
None.
None.
Again, I went by and drove around the property, took a look at it.
Did you have any conversations with anyone?
No, none.
Okay, thank you. So let's go forward with item number 3 in the public hearing.
Item number 3 is a conditional use permit for a medical office use in the CT zone, PLN 2010-1378 and CUP 2010-0253. We're here tonight in order allow for a conditional use permit for medical uses within the commercial tourist zone. The applicant is proposing tonight the reuse of the vacant automobile recreational vehicle dealership building and outdoor sales lot. The general plan designation is general commercial. The zoning district on this is commercial tourist. These actually appealed by a neighborhood resident, and the appeal went to the city council, and the city council went ahead and moved forward with approval of an upholding of the Planning Commission's finding and approval. The reason why the initial resident appealed was due to noise, traffic, and light from the site. So the site was constructed as condition, and it operated as a sales lot and an auto dealership until 2007. And in 2007, the Planning Commission approved PLN 2007-1271, allowing the sale of boats and other recreational vehicles on site. The boat sale lot closed only within a year later. The property went into Chapter 7 bankruptcy as a part of Kelly Gerhardt's bankruptcy filings, and the subject property was used to settle a claim in the bankruptcy court. The current owner has accepted this property as a part of his bankruptcy settlement. The proposal, but the, excuse me, the proposal tonight is to convert indoor and outdoor auto sales to medical uses. Per AMC 93701, medical uses are considered healthcare services, and it is a conditional use for the CT zone. The applicant proposes to convert the existing automobile sales retail building into medical offices, and they will complete an additional 1,500 square foot remodel in addition to the existing building. This is a photo of the existing site as it stands today. As you can see, it is vacant. It's an empty sales lot. The site is paved and graded as part of the original approval back in 1999 and early 2000. And there is installed landscaping that was completed at the frontage of San Paulo Road per the original conditional use permit in 1999, as well as an additional condition in 2007 to replant the plantings, but they have seemed to not survive the without water. So this is the proposed site plan. The applicant proposes to install brand new trash enclosures, as well as modify the existing drop-off area into a new drop-off area for patients who need assistance to enter the building rather than utilizing the parking lot. And the applicant also proposes a new monument signage at the primary entrance. As stated before, the applicant will be utilizing additional landscape areas all along San Paulo Road, as well as providing landscape fingers for additional shade in the parking lot to reduce the heat island effect, as well as create a little bit more ambiance in the back of the building. The applicant is also proposing to utilize stamped concrete for sidewalks and rights of path, as well as a rear concrete stamped rear patio provides additional areas for breaks and whatnot for the workers that are in the building. And as stated before, the applicant is also proposing tonight to add to the existing retail sales area by enclosing what's known as the covered walkway. This area was utilized to park cars for the Mitsubishi dealership, and what the applicant proposes tonight is wall off those walkways and create additional office space. The first drawing to the top is the existing north elevation. As if you go out to the site today, as you can see here, there's the covered walkways over here, the sort of the arcade look, and then this is sort of the rear on the side. The stated before, the applicant proposes here to basically cover these walkways and create walls on all sides of the buildings to create additional space. This is the existing south elevation. This area right here is where originally the auto dealership had areas to do automobile repair, oil change, et cetera. Existing floor plan as it stands today, areas shown for sales, reception area for those who are waiting to buy a car or waiting for parts. And this area right here was utilized for automobile repair. This is the proposed proposed floor plan by the applicant. The areas shaded in gray are the areas that are the covered walkway, and those areas will be added to as a part of the remodel of the building. This development was done very, I guess the best word is funky. The proposed use will utilize the existing San Paulo Road access. However, adjacent to the dealership is the San Paulo Inn, and this inn actually utilizes the existing driveway, and it's currently shared by the two uses. However, staff went ahead and looked at to see if there was an access agreement or an easement for either the San Paulo Inn or as a part of the old Mitsubishi dealership, and none exists at this time. Condition 6 requires the applicant to provide a reciprocal access easement at this driveway in order to give clear rights to the San Paulo Inn or the property owner of the rear that ability to access the driveway for any fire emergency purposes, as well as another ingress and egress for that site. Here's a picture showing where that access easement is proposed and where it currently is. As you can see, this is San Paulo Road. And the inn utilizes this first access off of San Paulo, but it goes through the back, and then you're able to exit off the existing shared easement. The second access point has similar conditions, and this was the access point that I pointed out earlier that was on the eastern end of San Paulo Road. The applicant at this area was open, giving the ability for people who wanted to use the San Paulo Inn driveway to come in and go into the auto dealership. As a part of PLN 2007-1271, the applicant requested additional security fencing, and the purpose of this fencing was to scare the boats and other outdoor items that were a part of the boat sales and other recreational vehicles. At this time, staff is proposing the removal of the fence, and that's condition 10, simply because, you know, we don't have this. This type of fencing isn't really consistent with any other type of medical office uses throughout the city. And again, it was really approved as a part of a security measure in order to make sure that no thieves or anybody else got into the boat sales lot during the night and stole items off the boats. The environmental determination for this application is categorically exempt through Section 15301, existing facilities, and minor modifications with an increase in floor area of less than 2,500 square feet. The Planning Commission needs to make findings in order to approve the conditional use permit for the proposed medical office use in the commercial tourist zone. The proposed project use is consistent with the general plan, and that the proposed project use satisfies all applicable provisions of the title. The establishment and subsequent operation or conduct of the use will not, because of the circumstances and conditions applied in the particular case, be detrimental to the health, safety, and welfare of the general public or persons residing or working in the neighborhood of the use, or be detrimental or injurious to property improvements in the vicinity of the use. Finding number 4, that the proposed project or use will not be inconsistent with the character of the immediate neighborhood or contrary to its orderly development. And number 5 is that the proposed use to project will not generate volume of traffic beyond the safe capacity of all roads providing access to the project, either existing or approval. Your alternatives tonight is to recommend modifications to the project and or any of the conditions of approval that's presented to you in your staff report. The commission may determine that more information is needed and will need to clearly state that type of information and bring that item back to staff so we can bring it back to you at a later date, or the commission may deny the project. If the commission the commission must specify the reasons for denial of the project and make associated findings with such action. And with that, I open it up to the Planning Commission for questions.
Thank you, Alfredo. Do we have any questions of staff? Not yet.
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino.
Yes, I just, I'm not clear. These are going to be medical offices, you say, right?
That's correct.
And how many doctors, I assume doctors are going to be working there, medical doctors? Or?
This is probably a question that the applicant who is here tonight would be able to answer a little bit better. But at this point, what we've plan checked and what we've come through, we're assuming it is, you know, medical offices in terms of, you know, primary care or whatever else falls under that umbrella that isn't necessarily essentially doesn't need to go to a hospital for.
And are you satisfied that there's adequate parking for the number of offices that are contemplated?
Yes, the number of offices and the square footage as it is consistent with the parking as per the Itasca Municipal Code, as well as the handicap parking is consistent with the California Building Code at this time.
Is shared with the San Paolo Inn at this time?
Yes, the access actually is completely on the subject property's property.
Okay.
The San Paolo Inn utilizes the subject property's driveway as a second point of ingress and egress. And this is for fire personnel, for emergency services, policing, et cetera, as well as the residents themselves. Right now, if you were to go out onto site today, that this little portion, sort of where this triangle ends, this portion is fenced off. So we as staff can't get on the property. However, a car can get onto the driveway and drive onto the San Paolo Inn.
As things stand, though, I gather that the owner of this property could forbid the San Paolo Inn from using that access road. Is that right?
Potentially, yes.
But the position of staff is that instead there should be some grant of a legal right to the San Paolo Inn to enable them to continue using this access.
Is yes, that right? That's correct.
And that grant would be free of any charge, I take it?
Charge in meaning?
Well, any financial, you know, compensation or consideration?
No charge.
Now, has there been any agreement worked out between the two parties in this regard or any negotiations about it?
No, not at this time.
as a part of, I believe it's condition six, where under the final building permit and or final occupancy, that the easement needs to be in place. So there's quite a bit of time left in order for the applicant to work with the property owner of the San Paulo Inn to obtain those easements.
Okay, now turning to the secondary access, we have a similar situation, but is that access entirely on this property again, or is it shared property? How does that work?
Right now, the secondary access, if you were to come in from San Anselmo and hang a right in order to, you would basically get onto the San Paulo Inn's property. You'd be utilizing the San Paulo Inn's property. And originally, there was access from this driveway onto the car lot.
So that would be access from the San Paulo Inn's property onto the car lot.
That's correct.
Right. I see.
And at this point, we had, as a part of the first plan check, we had brought this up to the applicant. And because they at one time were showing the ability to utilize not only that, you know, the primary access that's showing tonight, but as well as the secondary access, to which we informed the applicant that they would need to go obtain the access easements from the San Paulo Inn's property owner.
Okay.
To which they revised the plan to what you see tonight.
All right. So I think I'm getting the picture then. In order for the owner of this property to use the secondary access point, it's going to need some kind of permission, easement from San Paulo Inn to enable people to get to that secondary access point. And with respect to the primary access point, San Paulo Inn is going to need permission, some kind of an easement agreement with the owners of this property. Am I right?
That's correct. Like I said, the development...
Take care of both of these things, and both property owners will get what they need.
That's what we're hoping for tonight, yes.
I understand. Thank you.
Commissioner Ward.
Maybe I'm missing something, but when I drove up there, the easiest way to get there is from San Anselmo Road, and you just go past Kentucky Fried Chicken, and you're there. So I don't see what the problem is. See, when the fence comes down, you can just enter that from half a dozen different directions. I don't see what the issue is myself.
No, there's landscaping and everything there. You can't just go up the hill. There's landscaping. When you take down the fence, there's still that little hill and the landscaping there. You couldn't just, there's still just those entrance points.
The grade, and that is correct, grade along San Paulo, it's about approximately 2-to-1. It's a pretty steep grade. So in order for them to cut a new driveway, if they chose to have a second access point, they're not required if they chose, that would cost the applicant quite a bit of money. But that's something that they could potentially do in the future because at this point, per our municipal code, they do meet the warrants and the abilities to have a secondary access on their own property and ditch this whole idea of easements if they so choose to. But again, as the way the properties were developed back in the late 90s and early 2000s, we're just really trying to correct the wrongs of the past and trying to get this going in the future for so that we don't have these issues coming up time and time again.
Okay.
I want to make sure because I thought, boy, that's going to be a heck of a... And then could you just clarify for me 28 and 29, the mechanism for the funding of the sewer main? So is there... Is someone already taking care of that with sewer run at some point that now this property owner is, I mean, what's, if I just needed a bit of clarity on that.
Those are standard conditions that Public Works applies to. At this point, they're connected to the city sewer system, so.
So there's nothing special about this. So there really isn't necessarily a need for a mechanism to fund the maintenance then?
Potentially. So, but that's in there just in case there is at one point there may need to be an establishment of it. But again, this is a standard condition from Public Works. So as the building permits come in, we'll flesh out to make sure that something is in place to at least take care of that.
Okay. Commissioner Sturdivant?
I had a similar question about condition 21, a mechanism for funding and maintenance of the storm drain facilities. Is this a boilerplate form you're saying you'll flesh it out as that's how this will work?
That's correct.
Okay, good. Yeah, one other question. Have you spoke to the applicant about the removing the wrought iron fence? Because I noticed that condition 10 is removing it, and inside of our staff report, it said that they wanted to keep it. So has there been any further discussion on that?
The last discussion I had with the applicant was that the property owner would like to keep the fence up. But again, as we pointed out in the staff report as well as in the PowerPoint, similar uses around the city, we really don't like having those fences up there, especially with the landscaping that's supposed to be reinstalled. And I mean, the whole point of the fence was originally for security purposes of the boats. So that's one of the other reasons why we don't really like having the fence there.
Thank you.
One last question with regards to the fifth condition to be met having to do with traffic. Just not thinking it's going to be any more than the dealership was when it's occupied. Any issues with traffic that you took a look at or considered?
Yeah, the traffic for a medical office use, typically it's a Monday through Friday. It's got a higher rate of what considered turnover in terms of parking, simply because as people come in appointments, people leave appointments. But as compared to a dealership where their main peaks are actually during the weekends, this use should be significantly less in terms of the weekend rate of traffic versus the 8 to 5 rate.
And probably where, evening as well.
Yeah, exactly. Unless, of course, a medical office does stay open late for patients, which some tend to do. Mm-hmm. But it definitely shouldn't be as much as a dealership, as people come and go all throughout the day in order to get their oil change, tire change, et cetera, or go take a look at a new car.
Okay. Thank you. All right. With that, if the applicant is here and would like to come forward, please do. You can press the button and turn on the microphone up there. Let us know your name. If you could press the little button up there.
Does that one work?
There we go.
Good evening. I'm Ellen Goodwin with SDG Architects. I'm the architect for this project. And to address just a couple things that the commissioners have mentioned, to clarify, this will be three medical professional office suites, which will be typical doctor's offices, which we've spoken about. I think one of the most beneficial aspects of this tenant improvement is through the revitalization of the site. The project proposes more than doubling the required landscaping, and that will be through the use of planters and new trees. The project includes reinvigorating the existing landscape planter along San Paolo Road at the street line, and it includes new street trees, which will shade the sidewalk and the street, as well as the new parking lot. The landscaping will also blend with the existing wrought iron fence, and it will provide screening of the parking and the building beyond. Since the fence is there, the owner would like to keep it there, and since we are going to be proposing more landscaping, we think it will blend, and it will match the existing fence that's around the entire site. The project also proposes planters every 3 to 4 parking spaces, as opposed to the minimum requirement of 8 spaces. This, again, will provide additional shading and soften the hardscape on the site. And we'll also be providing a landscape buffer around the building, and that will further soften the architecture. The project also offers the paved amenities and in forms of color-stamped concrete pathways, and as well as a patio for staff or guest use at the rear of the building. The project also proposes changing the color of the building. This was a suggestion from the planning staff that the harsh kind of cream color is less desirable than the new tan or softer light brown that we're proposing. We believe this will further enhance the aesthetics of the tenant improvement and will be beneficial to the site. Thank you very much.
If you could stay there for a moment. Any questions for Ms.?
I know there has been some comments and some discussion with the planning staff that the city has some vacant, you know, medical suites, and that's a concern that there are already some medical offices out there that are vacant. And the owner is aware of this, and they do have a couple doctors that they are working with at this time for the suite.
And do you have a fairly good idea about how many doctors will be working in each of these three suites?
No, I don't know personally how many. Boris, do you have a certain number?
If he's going to, we'll have him come up if we have another question.
Okay.
That'll be easier. Thank
That'd
you.
That'd be good.
All right, and then you mentioned that there the plan is to use just one access, or that the requirement is for one access, and that is the plan, only to use one access, or is there a possibility of using both?
There is a fence that actually encircles the whole site that blocks off both access points, and the plan is to only use the one legal one that's on the property, since there is not an easement at this time to go across the other property. We haven't discussed it in great detail, what they would like to do, but we've talked about using the one access point that we need. If we don't need the second one, then maybe that's just not something that they want to pursue at this time.
So then there was also the point that the staff is requiring that you grant an easement to the San Paulo Inn with respect to the primary access that you're planning to use. And there's no problem.
Sturdivant.
Yes, this is really going to renovate that building quite well. Like you were saying, it's going to really bring it to life, give it some purpose rather than just sitting there vacant. And with all the extra landscaping, it does seem like there's going to be a lot of green and a lot of trees. And with that, I was kind of looking at the building today, and I'm just thinking that, you know, that with that wrought iron fence there, that really does take away from that from the sidewalk, the landscaping, all the work you are doing. So is the applicant dead set against or really wants to keep that there, or is there a consideration for taking that wrought iron fencing down around the front?
We have discussed it, and, again, it's since it's there, you know, rather than going through the cost of removing it, we figure it's there. The planning department has no takes no issues with the fence line around the other sides. It seems, it doesn't seem to match. If you're allowed to have a fence along two property lines, why not all three of them? And it's there. It provides some security. And it will be, it's a nice wrought iron fence, and it will blend with the new landscaping that we're going to be putting in. So right now, it's pretty stark, and I understand that it looks very fenced in, but it will blend with the new landscaping that we're proposing, and I think it'll add a nice feature to it rather than being very harsh at the moment. But when the owner speaks, he can maybe speak to that point as well.
Thank you.
The other, Commissioner Colomarino.
One last thing. The staff is requiring removal of the wrought iron fencing along San Paulo Road. That's not an issue, right? I mean, the applicant's prepared to do that. It's just it's the rest of the wrought iron fence that you want to leave up. Is that do I have that correct?
No, it's all of the fencing we would like to keep up.
Then you're opposed to
me that one of the reasons you want the fence is for security. Aren't these facilities sort of targeted for people to break in and steal medical supplies and whatever drugs would be on hand? So I would think you would want the fence for security reasons too, wouldn't you?
Yes, we agree. That's why we would like to keep it. It'll provide that security, and it's already existing, so it's already there. It's been approved by previous CUPs. And then again, when we're blending with the landscaping and the new plants and shrubs and trees, we think it'll be a good amenity for the site.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm trying to recall any passed by there, of course, millions of times and went out there today, but I'm not recalling any signage, and I don't think I saw anything in here. Is it just going to be simply an address and people will know how to find it? Or Alfredo, did I miss the signage in?
There is a proposed monument sign at the primary entryway.
Okay. But, and is that, and I can't remember, is that existing right now?
No. The proposed monument sign to match the existing architecture and color scheme that the applicant's proposing tonight.
At the south driveway?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Goodwin.
Thank you.
And did Commissioner Colomarino, if we could have, are you Mr. Pilch? Thank you, Dr. Pilch. Hello. Good evening.
Good evening. I want to address a few issues, if I may. Number one is the fence is definitely for security. We have other medical facilities, and the proximity of the facility to the highway, to the main street, agreeing to more than double the amount of landscape required to make a place nice. It is owner-occupied building. It's not to rent for other tenants. We have several physicians who will be partners in it, and they place would be owner-occupied. We wanted it to be nice. We wanted it to be safe. And that's the reason for us not arguing about how much landscape and how much planters to put in. We wanted it to be a nice place. Second thing is the easement. We don't need a second entering point, but we would like to have it. So that I would like to condition of easement to grant to the other owner to be made conditional to that both of us will exchange the easement right to each property. Then we will have a secondary access, and they'll have a secondary access. The way it is written now, it seems like we're required to do it, but they don't. So
I think, Dr. Pilch, that's probably because it's your project and they're not coming before you. Alfredo, do you want to address that?
That's correct. The entitlement that's before you tonight is for Mr. Pilch's mm-hmm. project and not necessarily for the San Paulo Inn. Again, the whole reasoning behind for this and for the primary entrance only is to allow that second ingress and egress for the San Paulo Inn. Since the San Paulo Inn's property owner is not here tonight for an entitlement or something mm-hmm. That the Planning Commission would see, we wouldn't require it. Now, if they came in with something different, say a year from now or 2 years from now or 4 years from
discussion
now.
With the inn, have you talked to them and to see if they're amenable to something such as that easement?
I did not. We never had any contact. But I would like to. I mean, I have no problem. But if we grant the easement and we have to maintain the road, and the motel traffic would be heavy, and it would be going through existing road, which we would be maintaining. I think we would be reasonable. We would like to give it. I just would like not to make it that we have to do it. Otherwise, then there is no way for us to would be probably to have them agree to give us an easement. So, I mean, if this is a condition, I guess we'll have to live with it. But I just think in a fairness to us, it would be just fair.
I understand what you're saying. I guess I'm a little surprised that at this point no one's spoken with the inn so that we're coming. I mean, Alfredo, have you had any conversations with them?
No, I have not had any conversations with them. Again, this is really, unfortunately, we're sort of in a, we really can't force the San Paulo's hand on providing.
No, I understand that. What I'm curious about is why we're coming here tonight and we're asking as a condition that the applicant grant an easement, but then, the applicant hasn't been in touch with the inn to say, hey, are you willing to give over here? We're willing to give over here. That conversation hasn't even been had. So it is a little challenging that here we're going to say, okay, you need to give this easement, but he's not guaranteed something, which of course we can't do tonight. And so.
And they never ask us. Nobody ever asked me for any easement.
Well, and probably just because it's been a casual use, they've been everyone's been doing it for years, right. And so they never thought about.
Well, for over the years.
And I understand that. That's just not something that we have the ability to do tonight.
No, you don't. But you can just force me to just give the easement, and I probably will not get my easement because if they have no reason to give it, why would they? And it would just basically will disadvantage me. But I don't want the whole project to be destroyed because of that. But
got
I just
it.
Think it would be fair if you just leave it open. And I promise I have no problem giving an easement and getting easement from us as well for second access.
Okay. Commissioner Colomarino.
Let me just say, with respect to condition number 6, I think there's a real question about the legality of imposing that condition on this applicant, because we don't have the power to say he must grant an easement, a property right to use his property without compensation from somebody else. I mean, that's just not within the government's power under the due process clause of the Constitution. So I really question. I cannot vote in favor of this condition, I can tell you right now, and I think it would be illegal to have it in there. I think it's one thing to talk about him making a deal, encouraging him to make a deal with the San Paulo Inn, but for us to say he must grant the San Paulo Inn an easement to use that access road, I don't think we have the power to do that. And I would not be willing to support it. It would be nice if he could cut some deal with them and give them the right to use that access and get something in return, such as the right to use the secondary access from them.
Blaine, this project, when it was approved or built 14, 15 years ago, they didn't get the proper easements. It was all intended to be one master planned commercial development. Reciprocal access easements among all these parcels was obviously intended, but they were never legally recorded. Unfortunately, we only have one party at the table today, so we can only condition one party because we don't have the other party. The intent is, as other parties come before us, that we'll get those additional easements if they can't work out that agreement on their own, which hopefully they can, because that would be the best way to resolve it. The problem with this one access point is if we don't have the reciprocal access agreement there and this party cuts off that access, we do have a problem just with orderly development and emergency access. The way those hotel rooms are set up, the way fire trucks, if you look at it, it's a long, narrow strip. You can't get a fire truck out of there if you were to respond to something on the end. We also have policing issues. The police do need to get through there. We've had some issues with that hotel in the past. So we believe at a staff level, in terms of public safety, traffic, emergency service, and orderly development, that this required or requested condition would be legal and is there is a reasonable nexus based on that. The commission does have discretion on it. So if you want to amend this condition or waive the condition, you can do that. But I just want to make it clear why staff's asking for it. And we do understand it may not be as fair as equitable as we all would like it to be. At the same time, staff does believe there's some safety issues that make it important to get this easement if we can at this point.
Now, let me clarify. We still have the applicant here, sir. Are we asking questions of the applicant or?
The access.
The secondary one to be granted or
no,
this
condition
one?
Six. The rewording of condition six to allow the encouragement.
I think if you wanted to encourage without requiring.
Yes.
I would think that you would condition this, that this condition could be waived if they came back to the Planning Commission and demonstrated they had exhausted all good faith efforts. Okay. And then you could, in the end, when we're at the end, if they're at an impasse and they can't work it out, and they really think that it's an unfair condition, that we could bring it back to the Commission and you could make the final decision on whether or not to enforce.
Did you write all that down, Annette?
Could I suggest something?
Yes, Dr. Pelch.
If you just put it in that you encourage basically for me to give the, for us to give the access for the inn to our property, through our property, in return for them giving that one access through their property, that's what we'll propose to them, and they'll take it, they'll take it. If they don't, that I won't ask for any extra money or anything for that. I basically will ask for a reciprocal agreement for access the way it is now. I mean, it's not going to change anything because that's how it's been for years now. So if you just put the condition that that's what I will offer them, mutually exchange the access, I will offer it to them. And but then I 99% that probably will take it, will agree to it because it is what it is now.
Okay.
But if it will.
There will be doctors who are partners, I think you said?
Right. Right now the property is listed under, is owned by the LLC, which is Dr. Kiker and me. But we have group practice partnership of four other doctors. So in development of this particular location, we all will be partners. And doctors will be rotating as far as seeing patients. We have office in San Luis Obispo. We have office here. So there will be several doctors, but at any particular time, there may be only one or two doctors, or three doctors. Mostly.
So will this be entirely owner-occupied, or are you going to have some tenants as well?
The way it is now, it is all owner-occupied.
I see. So then you don't really have a worry about filling it up and finding tenants to rent or anything?
No, we don't need to rent.
I see. Okay. That's good to know. Thank you.
All right. Dr. Pilch, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone from the public wishing to speak on this item? All right. Seeing none, we will close public comment, and I will bring it back to the commission for a motion or discussion. Let me start firsthand. I saw Vice Chairperson Benz.
Discussion. The applicant indicated they want to keep the existing fence as is for security reasons. What is staff's position on that?
Staff's basic recommendation is based on trying to maintain a level of consistency with all our office commercial developments. So medical offices we have throughout town, especially on Morrill Road, none of those are other office uses that may start requesting the same thing, and you may have created a precedent or an expectation that that is okay. So that's the reason, you know, we just want to be consistent. That's the basis of our recommendation.
Thank you.
Commissioner Colomarino.
Yes, I'd like to respond to that by saying that this is a particular case over here along near San Anselmo, not over Morrill Road. And the case is distinguished quite significantly by the fact that there's already a decorative iron or wrought iron fence in here. Now, if there are other cases that come along where they have such a thing in place, it might not be unreasonable to consider that an exception. But I wouldn't see this case as a precedent that opens the floodgates to people coming in and saying, well, I also have a medical office, and therefore I'm entitled to a fence. I mean, these guys have a fence here, and the question is, are we going to put them to the cost and inconvenience of taking it down? The reason that I hear that's more compelling, but I'm not sure I find it compelling, but more credible, is aesthetics. But the architect spoke to that and how they want to integrate the landscaping in to be compatible with the fencing. So my reaction to this is that I'm not persuaded about the fencing. And then on the other condition of the easement,
how he phrased it, that we would like you to do this, and if you make every good faith effort to have the inn grant you the other one, and it doesn't work out, come back and we will waive this.
That's fine. I mean, if we say okay. We like them to do it. And I think I also want to say that I think the practical concerns that Director Frace expressed are very important, mm-hmm. and I don't question them at all, and this should be done, and the San Paolo Inn should make sure it's done. I mean, they're using this property now for access, and they may not even know that they don't have the legal right to do it, and so you should have bargaining power and making a deal with them. They should want to make this deal. It's for their benefit. And I understand fully the city's need to try to be vigilant and get this done. I'm just saying that the way to do it is
I think the way the director phrased it is appropriate, and I think we can probably all. Let me go to First Commissioner Ward.
Yes. On condition 10 on that fence, your point that other medical offices. The medical offices I've seen, some have security guards. Some are in totally different areas where they're lit up day and night. This is a sort of a backwater area. It just cries out for people to break into it. So I'm inclined to really insist that we remove item number 10. I think it's totally unreasonable, and I think the applicant has a desire to keep it there for security.
Everything, and it's not working, then he can get this waived. Is that, how are we going about this?
I would specifically word the condition that they're expected to obtain the easements and that they can come back and ask for this condition to be waived. So there's an expectation that if they can't work out this reciprocal mutual agreement, that we're bringing it back to the commission for final decision.
Very good. Thank you. And I also agree with my fellow commissioner Ward that that fence is actually, that building is actually kind of out of the beaten path. And it is kind of a unique situation. And after listening to the architects speaking to the extensive landscaping and integrating that with that as well, I have to agree. I believe the fencing should stay.
Any Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, I'd just like to note that condition six, it seems to me, should not just talk about the southern driveway, but rather the two different access points.
That's what it will be. It's going to say, we need you to do this, and you need to go make a good faith effort to go get the eastern one done as well. And if you come back to us and you've done everything you can to get the east along with the south given.
Right. Because then we're talking about a reciprocal deal. If we're talking just about the south, then we're saying he has to grant.
No, we're talking about both. Yeah.
Okay. So that would be a change in the language. So how do we get that language crafted?
Annette has crafted that down. And so am I correct on that, Annette? So it's basically what the director said to us, that this condition, you can come back.
Exactly what that language is before a motion is, well, ideally before it's made and certainly before voting on the motion.
Give me 2 minutes.
Okay, thanks.
Would you like us to take a 5 minute?
Is that the last issue that you have?
I think that's the last issue. We can take a 5 minute break. Let's be back at.
We'll come up with some language for you.
Let's be back at 8:07. Okay. All right, thank you. We'll reconvene our meeting, and Al, if the commission wants to go ahead and look up on the screen, and you can see the new wording. And Alfredo, do you want to go ahead and read that for us?
Sure. Condition six, as amended, would read as follows. Prior to the final occupancy of the building, the owner of subject parcel 049-225-008 shall provide reciprocal access easement with the adjacent property owner at 4900 San Paulo Road, APN 049-225-017, for southern driveway in exchange for an easement on the northern San Paulo end parcel. This requirement may be waived by the Planning Commission prior to occupancy if an agreement cannot be reached to the satisfaction of the Planning Commission.
Any comments or questions?
Yes, I think there's a problem with the word shall there because it is a command. It refers to enter into a reciprocal access agreement, something like that. I think that would be language that would be perfectly legal and appropriate. It communicates to the applicant what his duty is.
If you'd like to come to the podium, sure. Let me reopen our public comment.
I think this, the way it is written now, it actually puts an additional condition. I mean, not only now I have to give an access, but I actually have to arrange for obtaining the easement from him as well. So now it's almost double what I have to do.
So, Dr. Pilch, is your intention to not go to...
No, owner? I do. No, I do. But okay. The way it is written it's, right now, it says not only do I have to give an easement on my property, I have to somehow to obtain the easement from him, from their property, or I may not get a permit. I mean, I got now two requirements instead of just one.
Well, no, what it's saying is that if you cannot do this, it may be waived.
Right.
That whole
but it
entire
may be
requirement.
Not. So, it's actually added an extra condition for me. That's what I'm saying. I do want to give an easement.
Okay.
It's in my benefit to give an easement and get an easement for the
okay,
other.
Okay, let us keep working.
Yeah,
then.
Keep. Okay. You could put it in writing that I do want to have an easement and give an easement. But right now, when you edit, the way it's changed, it says that I not only have to give an easement, I have to somehow arrange to obtain the easement. So he may actually, now he can ask me to pay for his easement, and I have.
The two property owners shall be encouraged to enter into mutual easement agreements. Mutual agreements that will satisfy the Planning Commission requirement. Otherwise, it may be waived by the Planning Commission upon another subsequent meeting.
We were better off where we were. But I may I just say that I think the applicant made a good point that this does cover two things. Really, all that we're saying is we want him to try to enter into an agreement which allows the San Paulo Inn to continue using that existing access road.
Very true, but we also do not want to... from what the director is telling us, we don't want to say, hey, go work it out with the two of you and really just try to do it. And if they do, if they don't, there's no enforcement there. I think the major concern is the access, not just for San Paulo Inn, but it's your emergency access, that type of thing that staff is really saying, that's pretty serious. That's important. We don't want to just give up on that. So rather than just... hey, we recommend you go do this. We're trying to put something a little more substantial in there and not trying to require something more from the applicant, but trying to meet that need of, okay, go work it out with the owner of the inn and, make a good faith effort to get that worked out.
We can pretty much put it simple in one sentence that I will offer an easement for my property from the Thousand Oaks, and in exchange for easement, the owner will grant me from the other end. That's it. And I'll provide this in writing to him and say, oh, you can have an easement. I would like to have an easement. And it's just put it just exactly what you like to have in one sentence, that the owner will offer the easement to Motel in exchange for the easement to his property from the other end. The way it is, okay. It's how it is now anyway. So,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Understood. One sentence will just cover everything. And I will do offer to him. When I come for final approval, I'll show you in writing offer, and hopefully at that time it will be finalized.
Commissioner Colomarino.
I think maybe we have a breakthrough here because perhaps what this condition can say is that this is conditioned based upon the applicant carrying out his promise to offer an easement to the San Paulo Inn for the southern access,
yes.
Get back in return something else.
Yes.
In that way, because he said now that he's prepared to do that, he's committed to try to make that offer, then we can take him up on that in the condition.
But I would like to have an exchange. The same easement I have now, which has been in existence for almost 10 years now anyway.
Right, and you're making an offer. What you're...
The reason there was no easement, I think, is because that particular property used to be owned by one person. The motel and the Mitsubishi and the other lot, which has
the mobile
home. Mm-hmm. That was one property. It was three property, but they're owned by one person. Therefore, they did not have to have an easement.
Okay, I think we have some wording here. Alfredo, do you want to give it another go?
Prior to the final occupancy of the building, the owner of the subject parcel 049-225-008 will offer reciprocal access easement with the adjacent property owner at 4900 San Paulo Road for southern driveway access. That in right now. In exchange for an easement on the northern San Paulo Inn parcel provided by the property owner of APN 049-225-017. This requirement may be waived by the Planning Commission prior to the occupancy of an agreement if an agreement cannot be reached to the satisfaction of the Planning Commission.
Commissioner Colomarino.
I would just say that we can't require him to offer. I would say we'll follow through on his commitment to offer.
He's said that he will offer, so I think he's agreed to that condition.
But we're saying he shall. he shall offer. We are, this document says, the government is saying he shall do it. He has made a commitment to do it, and I think the, as far as we can go is to say we, that one of the conditions is that he'll follow through on that commitment. I don't understand why that would be a problem, but saying that he will offer to do this.
I think it's because he has come to the podium and said, I will offer it. So he is.
That's his commitment. We want him to follow through on that before this thing is approved.
I think it's, and I understand I'm not an attorney, but I think it seems to me like we're playing with wording a bit.
It's not.
I mean, because you could say that on just about any condition on.
Now here we're ordering him. We're ordering him to offer.
Would the word may instead of will be an acceptable substitution?
Well, does that get you where you want to get? Because he may offer, so he may not.
Well, but if we use the word will, if we say will follow through on his commitment, we're still saying he will do something. It's just like any other condition in here. The property owner will do this, will do that, will not do that. So
I don't know. He's made us a commitment to do it. I don't know why we're afraid to just say that and ask him to follow through on that commitment. Then it's clear it's coming from him. It's not coming from the government shoving it down his throat.
So you would like it to say the owner of the subject parcel will follow through on his offer
of reciprocity,
on his commitment to offer.
Correct.
On his
that's an LLC.
Okay,
so.
Commitment to offer. Okay.
That's the condition.
Are we? Okay. And as I had opened public comment, I need to ask if there is anyone else wishing to speak on this matter. Seeing none, we'll reclose public comment. And are we ready for a motion?
Madam Chair, I make a motion that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution PC 2010-0021, approving minor conditional use permit 2010-0253 based on findings and subject to conditions of approval, along with the rewording of Condition 6 and the striking of Condition Number 10.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Sturtevant, a second by Commissioner Colomarino. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Benz?
Yes.
Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. All right, and on to we have our castaway back. Thank you, Dr. Felch. Ms. Goodwin, thank you.
Thank you for indulging me. I know it may seem like a subtle point, but it's
I'm afraid it
isn't.
You're welcome.
I took it in the window.
Thank you for caring so much.
All right. Let's go on to item number 4, and before the staff report, let's just go through briefly to see if we have any conversations, any ex parte. Commissioner Schmidt.
No ex parte.
None.
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 Thank you. Callie.
Okay, our final public hearing item tonight is an amendment to the master plan of development for the Villas of Montecito. This is for lots 1 through 4 and 18 through 29 on Casabella Court. The project is located off of Las Lomas Principal and Montecito Avenue. It's towards the south end of El Camino Real. It was originally 9500 Las Lomas. The general plan designation here is high density residential, and it has a residential multifamily with 16 units per acre as the zoning district. It also has a planned development 18 overlay. Here on the site plan, you can see lots 1 through 4 are located on the south end of the project site, and lots 18 through 29 are located on the west side of Casabella Court. To give you a little bit of background about the project, in 2003, the plan development number 18 was established, and this created a tentative, they also did a tentative tract map, which created 30-lot subdivision. 29 of these lots are residential lots, and then lot 5, located here towards El Camino Real, is an office building, and there was a separate lot created for the internal private street. And as part of that, there's also an open space easement. So the street and the open space easement are lot 30, and those are all common open space for the development. Amendments to the master plan of development may be made by a planning commission, so it doesn't need to go back to city council to approve master plan of development amendments, which we have here before us tonight. Also in 2006, the original developer, developers began construction on 12 of the units. Those are the ones outlined here in red. And those are mostly built at this point. Tag Investors LLC has been working on completing the construction of these units. They've been working on that for the past several months since they purchased the project. Tonight, the applicant has proposed a few different amendments to the unbuilt lots. We have lots 1 and 2 located here on the corner, lots 3 and 4, and these are all proposed with floor plan and elevation revisions, and lots 1 and 2 have some site plan revisions. Lots 18 through 29 are proposed to be detached, and we have some elevations that we'll get into in a little bit. Lots 1 and 2, these are the site plan revisions that are proposed. In this one, they would be reducing the front setback from 18 feet to 6 feet. Basically, it's bringing the original house forward off the slope. The original house was it was originally planned to be constructed with a larger setback to allow for parking in the front driveway, but that required some large footings in the backyard and didn't provide much open space or private yard area for this unit. The applicant is proposing to move it forward, which minimizes the size of the footings and provides area for a deck and some private open space in the back. Staff has looked at the parking within the project site and feels that the PD 18 requirements would still be met even if these guest parking spaces in the driveway were eliminated. They have 14 guest spaces on Casa Bella Court that are within an open or within a common use area for all of the tenants. There are 12 lots which do not have driveway spaces, and that would be 12 lots with these two lots that would be losing the spaces. So staff feels that the minimum requirements for providing one guest parking space per lot would still be met. The overall parking numbers for the development still exceed those required by the PD18. These are the floor plan and elevation revisions for lots 1 through 4. The floor plan revisions are actually pretty minor. They're moving a couple of rooms around, but the number of rooms would still stay the same, and the total size of the building would increase only 2%. So it's a pretty minimal change to the floor plan. And the elevations would be changed with these new proposed elevations here on the lower right. There would be two different styles that they would use on lots 1 and 2 and then 3 and 4. And staff believes that these the architectural detailing on this meets appearance review standards and is a superior product and supports these revisions. For lots 18 through 29, located on the west side of Casa Bella, these are all vacant lots right now. The applicant has proposed to detach these units. Right now, they're approved as duplex units on individual lots, so there's a lot line that runs through the center of the duplex units. What they would do is just detach the units and provide a setback between each one, and they would be 3-foot setbacks on the interior lot lines. They would maintain the same front setback of 18 feet, so they would still provide parking in the front, and the number of bedrooms and the lot lines would all remain the same. These are the elevation revisions. This is one you see here with the attached units was what was originally approved in 2003, and the ones down here in color are what the applicant is proposing. So it's a more of a detached row house style. Staff does believe that this is an improvement in the architecture, and these supports these changes. Here we see a section drawing. So it was originally approved as a three-story unit with a garage on the lower floor and then the two living spaces above. The revisions will actually lower the height because the massing of the roof line will be, it won't be as large, so they can structure this differently to bring it down. And the overall section remains the same. These are the findings as shown in your staff report. They are standard findings for a conditional use permit, and there's an additional finding that the master plan of development ensures that the project is constructed with high-quality architectural design and landscape, justifying the 2003 plan development approval. And staff does believe that those findings can be met. The proposed changes are consistent with the mitigated negative declaration, which was originally approved by the City Council in 2003. The proposed amendments are minor in nature and will not create any additional units, bedrooms, or impacts to the site. Staff is recommending that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution as conditioned, and the applicant is here in the audience if you have questions.
Callie, let me just ask you briefly to go back to where you were showing the three layers. And what were you saying about that? It's this. It's come down lower now because, and I didn't quite.
It has to do with just the overall massing of the original building with this very large roof line. Mm-hmm. It actually was a taller building than what it is now.
Okay.
So here you can sort of see it. The architect has done this overlay. This drawing here is
right,
underneath
okay,
here.
There, I see it.
So you can see
it.
This okay. is the height difference right here, and then this, I think it's a chimney right here, something. But staff does believe that the revision will be just make a more consistent architecture for the neighborhood. It won't feel as large.
Got it. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. All right. Do we have any questions of staff? Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes, Callie. We had spoke earlier about landscaping requirements. Now that there are private backyards and the conditions that we have discussed that they are to be landscaped and maintained by the property owners, I'm wondering if the CC&Rs address the type of landscaping in which can occur in those backyards. And of particular concern that it actually kind of relates to the first item we had tonight at the Tascaro Christian home, where we had this tree that was located in the front yard of one of the single-family homes there that had been landscaped around. And because of the change in conditions, that tree eventually started rotting out. And on the project that we have here, there is an existing tree that's being retained between lots 25 and 26. And it seems like it might even be right on the property line. And I'm wondering if it would be important for us to ask that there be requirements included within the CC&Rs that talks about landscaping, the type of landscaping, and how to landscape around that particular oak trees or others within the development area. Next, you look at these projects, and they're nice because they're affordable, but they are notoriously lack enough parking inside of it. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. And part of what I blame it on is what I characterize as the new American household, where you have multiple occupants, and each one of them have a car. And so you might have six people live in these units and six automobiles. And so there's always never enough parking. And I'm wondering if there will be parking. Is there parking provisions down below the project that's next to the commercial piece? That I noticed that there's an access point, pedestrian access point there. But whether the people can park down there, I don't know. Could you answer that, please?
As far as the parking, all the parking has to be provided on the residential site. So they're not allowed to count any street parking or off-site parking towards what they're required to have. I don't believe that there are any provisions that allow them to park on the commercial sites.
based on what you provided, you've already stated that there's enough parking on site per the code. And so there conceivably could be off-street parking. People could park, you know, wherever they want. There is enough on the site, so there's no violation there. We have a standard condition that we have on all our projects, and this happens to be on page 75, number 4, where the department has the discretion to modify a project by 10%. I'm wondering if we shouldn't encourage that there be some, maybe some modifications made to add more parking. And again, I was even thinking about off-street parking, for instance, on, you know, people could park behind the units on Las Lomas Avenue, and could there be a gate that goes into each of those backyards so people could park up there if they wanted to? Or in that lot 30, maybe a path that work winds its way down the hill from Las Lomas Avenue into the development area. There's never enough parking in these projects. I just want to identify that.
Let me clarify, though. They do exceed the required parking per the code, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, which is one spot per unit was what I...
Yes, here's the parking table. So we have 28 units. There are two spaces provided in each garage. Mm-hmm. So that's 56 spaces in the garage. And then the plan development requires that they also provide one guest parking space for each unit. So
per household, that's what I'm hearing is three, two garage, one
yes,
guest.
Yes, that's what the PD requires.
Okay.
So 28 guest parking spaces. The PD requires 84 spaces. What they have right now is 56 spaces in their garage, 36 provided on 18 of the lots in the driveway. So 18 of these houses have driveways that you can fit two cars in. And then 10 of the lots don't have any parking in the driveway, and those utilize these parking areas mm-hmm. off the side. There's several of these guest parking spaces that are shared by the whole development.
And how many bedrooms are there in each unit?
Each unit has three bedrooms.
Okay, so... In my household, we have adult children now, teenage adult children. We have five cars. We have five people. If I lived in this development, I would not have enough parking for my family. Everyone happens to need a car. Again, that's the new makeup of what we're dealing with in today's world. And we see it throughout the community when we're driving down the street. Many cars parked in front of houses. And again, in developments like this, there's never enough parking. And again, they meet the requirements, which is fine. I'm just trying to suggest that there be some options for off-site parking along the street and make it convenient for those people to get to the property. And I'm offering that's something that could be considered. And under our standard condition 4, where things can be modified, that the applicant could maybe consider trying to add some things to increase the availability of parking.
One thing I might add that might help, there is a condition that requires a pathway through this open space area.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it might connect up here to Las Lomas. I'd have to take a look at their original plans to see. But there is an additional pedestrian path through this open space easement.
Yes. Yeah, I just want to make it convenient for them to park around. Because what happens in these projects is that you have minimum street width, that there's no parking allowed on the street, and there's red curb, fire lane, and people park there. It happens. It's just something that's there. And they meet the requirements, which is fine. Could they provide or want to provide more? And I want them to give them the opportunity to do that if they think it's necessary. That's all.
Commissioner Colomarino.
Before we go much more deeply into this question, I have to raise the question whether we have the discretion to require more parking than what's required by the code, or do we have that discretion?
Yes, they are proposing an amendment to the master plan which reduces their parking. So it's definitely within the Planning Commission's authority to say, no, you need to provide at least as much parking as you already have. Mm-hmm. That's why it actually doesn't fall within staff's authority to approve this amendment, because they are reducing their parking. We didn't feel comfortable. That was a staff decision.
All right. So I've been hearing it said, and I read it, they meet the requirements. What does that mean?
The plan development 18 has very specific standards that have to be met. So one of those is that they provide two guest spaces in the garage and two spaces in the garage and one guest elsewhere on site. So that has been met. But there's also the master plan of development, and that's where they have their total approved parking. That's where we get this currently approved 106 spaces for the overall development. So they are reducing their master plan of development overall parking to 102 spaces.
Okay. So although they meet the requirements of the section 18, is that what you said?
Yeah, it's two different things we're looking at. There's the plan development requirements that are in the zone change. It's basically the minimum parking standards that was written for the PD 18. And then there's the master plan development, which is the site plan that was approved. And the master plan is very specific about parking and architecture and floor plans. So we are amending the master plan.
And because they're reduced, we don't have to approve the reduction in parking spaces that were already included, provided for in the master plan.
That's correct.
Okay. And so you, the staff, you're saying we do approve it, and it's enough if they meet the requirements of 18. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Our staff does believe that they will still have sufficient parking on site. It is a reduction, but given the additional parking on other lots and the 14 spaces that are within the shared easement on Casabella, staff does feel that they will have enough parking.
So you're not concerned about this phenomenon that Commissioner Schmidt talked about, where people have five members of the family, all each with a car, strewn all over the place?
Parking is always a concern in multifamily neighborhoods. Mainly it comes from people not parking in their garages. So there are CCNRs that require people to park in their garages. It's just about the HOA enforcing that and making sure that those two spaces are utilized.
And to continue on that, though, and what authority does the city have over the HOA?
The city doesn't have any authority.
Okay, so they, although there could be violations of how the garages are being used, unless the HOA decides to enforce it, the city has no authority to make that work.
That's true, but our experience has been the HOAs are typically much more vigilant than the city in terms of enforcing these rules. If people aren't parking in the correct area, it's only going to impact this neighborhood within this area, which is the jurisdiction of the HOA. So if it's not a problem, then, you know, there, and it doesn't affect the members that live there, then that's fine. If there's a problem, then they have the ability to enforce it. So it becomes kind of a self-policing thing, which is kind of ideal, because the city really doesn't want to get into enforcing individual parking issues.
And I am not interested in the city doing that either. Again, all I'm trying to suggest is that we provide some flexibility, not require, provide some flexibility to the owners of the project to provide additional access to parking off street. And again, for those units that back up to Los Lomas, simple gate in the backyard could provide access directly to the unit from that street, versus having to walk around. Or if there is a pathway that's going through Lot 30 up to Los Lomas, then that would make it convenient for those people to park up there and walk down the pathway, be it guests or residents. There's only one project area that I know that has provided enough parking, and there's two projects next to each other, actually. There's one park, Los Robles Park, I think it is, and San Luis Obispo off of Highway 101 on Los Sosos Valley Road. In that particular case, they put a perimeter road around the project, and there's parking on the outside all the way around. And that is a facility that has enough parking. No other that I can think of does. And, again, it's just a problem that's continuous. And I would like to see that if we could provide some incentive to try to solve that problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Colin Moreno.
Yes, 2 points. One, with respect to getting people to park in their garages, I think we really do have to depend on the HOA because, again, the government can't go in and say you have to park in your garage.
And we've all agreed on that, yes.
Yeah, you can say you can't park somewhere else, but if you want to park somewhere else on your own property, you're welcome to do that. Secondly, I'd just like to know exactly what Commissioner Schmidt is proposing here, because it's not clear to me. You talk about building in flexibility, so we're going to have a condition that
Before we get to talking about conditions and things, we're kind of asking questions of staff. I'm assuming we may have the applicant in the audience. No? You are. Okay, good. You fooled me there. We do have the applicant in the audience. So before we go too far down this path, let's ask our questions of staff and keep this on the burner. We can talk to the applicant as well. So any other, beyond the parking, do we have any other specific questions of staff right now? Commissioner Sturtevant.
When it comes to the units, what is it, 18 through 29, that going to, with the individual freestanding units, any changes in grading, any changes in drainage, any changes in anything at all, or is that fairly pretty much the same as it was when they were going to build them the other way, the duplex style?
It will be pretty close to the way it originally was. The units are in the same location, so the changes will be very minor, and they're on the same lots, very similar setbacks. So there will be changes in grading, and Public Works has conditioned that they provide revised grading and drainage. Just the drainage calculations with their building permits when they pick those up for the revised floor plans.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions before we bring up the applicant? All right. Well, I guess you are Mr. Cummings. If you'd like to come to the podium, please.
Is this on?
Yes.
My name is Jerry Reese. I'm not Mr. Cummings.
Okay.
I'm owner of Reese Construction. My brother-in-law is the developer of this project in Carlsbad. That's where he lives. I can answer some questions, but probably not a lot in that I'm just charged with building the project and not designing it. But I do know something about what's been happening here.
Okay. Is there any statement or anything you've come prepared to say that you would like to go ahead with, and then we can ask you questions, or should we just open up?
No, we read the staff report, and we thought it was great.
Okay. Thank
you. We're in full agreement with it.
Okay. Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes. Do you understand my concern about the parking?
Yes, I do. And I can't remember if there's a gate at the top or not. I know that in the lot 30, the open space higher up on the hillside, there is a path in the, I believe, the original landscape plan that wanders through that area. There's also, I believe that it connects with, in fact, I know it connects with a sidewalk that goes in front of 9, 10, and 11, units 9, 10, and 11, and down a stairway into that parking lot that's owned by Rex Hendricks right below the project. It's my understanding that was a requirement for pedestrian access out to El Camino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense. How about the idea? Is there going to be fencing along Las Lomas Avenue?
The fencing is my recollection of the plans, and I think it might show in the plans you have. The fencing is, as I recall, below the slope. There's a pretty steep slope.
So it's at the base
along,
of the cut.
That upper road, Las Lomas. There is fencing along there. I believe there's metal fencing there now up higher. The backyards are intended to be pretty much solely on the flatter area closer to the units.
If someone wanted to, though, they could come in and apply for retaining walls, and they could increase the size of the backyard?
Well, I don't think, I haven't read the CC&Rs, but I don't think that that's going to happen with in a project like this with CC&Rs. These folks tag investors have built a number of projects of this magnitude and this type, and the projects that they've built have been very tightly controlled.
Good. How about the question about controlling the landscaping and the type of landscaping in the backyards of those individual lots?
Well, I think that's obviously important, and it needs to be addressed. Right now, we're working on the landscaping. Madrone Landscaping is working on the landscaping with the city, and as far as the types of plants, types of trees that are going in and what have you, the original landscaping plan and the landscaping that was in had some large oak trees down between rows of buildings where there was no room for them to grow, things like that. Those have been taken out. But I can't address the CC&Rs as far as landscaping is concerned in that upper area above the road.
There was, and I can't find the condition now, but there was a comment that basically said that the backyards of those of the lots are to be landscaped by the property owners. It sounded like the CC&Rs that you were talking about dealt with the common area more than the backyard areas. Will the CC&Rs, if you know?
I know the backyards will be fenced. We're going to be putting fencing in the backyards, but I think definitely where you're dealing with the oak trees and the pine trees that are there and what have you, there needs to be some mechanism there for protecting them, but I don't know how that would be done.
Yeah, it just there's that one tree that I identified between lots 25 and 26 that's in those, you know, right on that property line between those two units. And again, it's matured within a native state. Typically what happens, people will plant grass or do something that will get underneath the tree itself, and eventually the irrigation then rots the tree. And at some time in the future, if that does happen, then those property owners will have to come back to this commission and ask for permission to remove the tree. And it was similar to the item that we had, you know, the first item we had tonight.
Right.
And it would be nice to try to prevent the loss of that tree. And I think that if the CC&Rs included restrictions on how the landscape was going to be dealt with in the backyards and what people can do, what they couldn't do, would be helpful.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I really can't, you know, address the CC&Rs. I know that, of course, they have them, but I have never read them. I'm just more concerned with getting the buildings built. And
yeah.
If I could interject for a minute, Director, yes. Frace, typically with CC&Rs, as long as you're not doing something in your backyard that is something that your neighbors are going to see that is absolutely atrocious, or you know, something that is going to, let's say, decrease property values or hurt your neighbor, and being that that's not something that was noticed, that we're going to be detailing landscaping, we don't necessarily want to get into that.
Staff's not recommending that.
Tonight. What about Commissioner Schmidt's concern specifically about the oak tree, that one oak tree between, I think you said lots 25 and 26? Is there something that could be done about that in terms of encouraging the protection of that tree to the extent that it's not, you know, further impacted by any plantings or what, you know, residents might not know could hurt it?
Just, if I may, just the little bit of work that we've done on the exteriors of some of the existing buildings so far in the lots, the city has been very diligent about what we can and can't do with any of the trees. We had to take a tree out that had died, a couple of them, in fact. So it seems to me that there must be some mechanism with the city that pretty much watches after that. I may be wrong, but they sure have out there.
Well, you kind of do in the initial phase, but, you know, once residents move in and they say, oh, and it'd be great to plant some ivy, and look how it winds up around the oak tree. Oh,
okay, I understand that.
I think based on that, definitely we have the most control during construction. When it's individual homeowners, we don't really have the mechanism to control. If there's a concern about what may or may not be planted under the tree, the best way to do it is maybe to have the developer install something appropriate now. Typically, people won't put too much energy into taking something out. So if there's a landscape treatment or mulching treatment or edging treatment or something like
that. Yes. I live about half a mile down the road from this development, and I've passed it at least two or three times every day in the last several years, and it looked like it was abandoned, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago?
That's correct.
And before all construction stopped, I went through the units, and I was very impressed, just absolute first-class construction. They're just absolutely beautiful. And I never understood why they didn't sell. But my question is, in breaking up the double units to have smaller single units, was that done to make them more marketable?
Yes. We had, like, I think what the number was. We had four standalone units and, I believe, eight duplexes. And the people that have, the first four standalone units either have deposits or are in escrow. They've been much more popular than the duplexes. And they're somewhat similar inside. They're equally finished as far as, you know, fit and finish, carpeting, tile. It's just a matter of the preference seems to be that people want, you know, their individual homes. And we have the space on the site without doing any changing to the property lines or the density or anything like that. And that's the reason.
Well, I don't know.
I'm just saying they would receive notice about tonight's meeting and what was being proposed. So
were the adjacent property owners notified?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, it's required. Yeah. Any other questions of Mr. Reese? No. Thank you very much, Mr. Reese.
Thank you.
And seeing no one else in the public wishing to speak, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission for any discussion or further questions. Commissioner Schmidt.
I'd like to continue with the parking and answer Mr. Commissioner Colomarino's question about what I'd like to see or what I'm trying to achieve. And what I'm trying to state nicely, I guess, is that I want to provide the applicant an option to increase parking for the site. I don't want to require it because they meet the plan requirements, the development plan requirements that they're dealing with, and I'm satisfied with that. However, again, we typically, and we do in this particular staff report and conditions, we have one condition that says that there can be some modifications of up to 10% on the project handled by staff. And what I would encourage the developer to do is look at alternatives into increasing parking either on-site or access to off-site parking.
I understand correctly that the idea is to provide for the plan that we would approve tonight to be modified to a certain extent, I think you said 10%, with staff's approval for the purpose, if they choose to pursue it, of adding some more parking. Is that a fair interpretation of what you just said?
Yes, and there presently is that condition in the report that staff can deal with modifications up to 10%.
So you're looking at sort of an encouragement that we would encourage the applicant to work with staff to look at options for more parking, a pathway maybe up to San Paolo that would be easy for the residents to access. So you're just kind of
saying encouraging
you to.
If there's some more spots that you could squeeze it in within a it sounds like the has
have
the
you been there? There's no more spots.
No, has the map has there's a map that's been recorded, right? Yeah, so there's going to would have to be some type of lot line adjustment. I mean, lot 30 is set, and these parking spaces that are along lot the road are part of that common area. I know I haven't driven through, but when I look at the plan view, I can say, oh, there might be a spot here or something there. But again, that's already cast in stone with the map, so there would have to be an adjustment made to move those lines. So to me, at this point, it would be more providing access off-site to each of the streets.
To encourage.
And encourage that. And that whatever the modifications are, for instance, if this path on Lot 30 doesn't touch Los Lamas Avenue, the owners could come in and make it work and touch that, and that would be a modification. I mean, they always can lock the gate, too. Yep. So.
Commissioner Colin Marino.
Yes, I'd just like to ask Director Frace what your reaction is to the possibility of adding this sort of a condition along the lines that...
He's not saying a condition. He's just saying I'd like to recommend. I think he's just kind of saying I'd like to add with this that we recommend...
So where would this recommendation would be among the conditions? Or?
No, it wouldn't be a condition. There's already in the conditions that staff has some leeway to work with the applicant if there's a less than 10% change, if it's to betterment of. So he's just really saying, you know, hey, staff, hey, applicant, we'd like you to work together that if there's a potential to, you know, get a pathway for some off-site parking, we just... He's looking more at just a statement to say that I'd like you to consider making a small change or looking at what might be feasible to put further access to parking. He's not asking for a condition.
So this is nothing then that the Planning Commission needs to vote on, right?
No, it's not a condition okay. We're voting on. He would just like to add that in as a recommendation that the commission would make to, you know, make a concerted effort.
So then what would be, I'm trying to understand what we would be asked to do. A motion would be made approving staff's recommendation subject to something else?
Could I add to the conversation, please? Okay, so condition 4, it's on page 75. Community Development Department shall have the authority to approve the following minor changes to the project, such as modify the site plan by less than 10% by providing access to off-street parking. And so we could add some specifics within there, but it doesn't have to be that they have to do it. It offered the suggestion that something that could be done and lead it in that condition.
I've got two others, so let me go in order here. Commissioner Ward.
Yes, as I understand it, the reason Commissioner Schmidt is concerned about additional parking is if, say, 3 or 4 homeowners get together and decide they're going to throw a joint high school graduation party and suddenly there's 20 cars descending on the place. But I've lived there, and all the streets around there are practically deserted all the time. You could park 100 cars around there and still have more spaces to park. I don't see where there's a problem. And again, if there's not a problem, why are we trying to fix it?
Okay. Thank you. Vice Chairperson Metz.
Yes, I tried to develop some language to insert into condition 4, an option for increasing parking on a voluntary basis within the project over the required parking.
Commissioner Colin Marino.
I just wonder about the productive I mean, we can throw in a few words, I suppose, and play with this. But isn't that all we're doing is playing? Because I don't see that we're accomplishing anything specific This is not obligatory. I don't know that it's really productive.
Commissioner Sturdivant.
Yeah, I see this more as making a motion and then just kind of asking and just making more of a direction to staff, saying, encourage, within condition four, work with the applicant to possibly increase off street parking or
access
parking.
To off street. I think as Commissioner Ward said, the access, the parking's there. It's the access.
Yes, the access to. So I see it as just I say we do the motion and we just it's a recommendation that they do that within their condition number four.
Well, I'll concede to what the majority is talking about with respect to Commissioner Colomarino's comments. Have you ever lived in a project like this, and have you ever dealt with the parking or the lack of parking? And with respect to Commissioner Ward's comment, this has to do with a party or anything else that's going on. Again, we're dealing with units in which you're going to have four or five people occupying the buildings. Each one of them is going to have a car, and there's not going to be enough parking there. And typically what happens is that there's violations of where people park that sometimes are under the authority of the HOA. Other times they're parked in a fire lane. So that's when the city gets involved at that point, is when there's someone who's parked along that red curb, and the city then is responsible for taking care of it at that point. If it's not...
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
The motion is that we... approve draft resolution PC 2010-0022, amending an amendment to conditional use permit 2002-0074, master plan of development, on APN 030-481-009 through 012. And 030-481-026 through 037, lots 1 through 4, and lots 18 through 29, Casabella Court, previously 9500 Las Lomas. Do I have a second?
I second it.
All right, we have a first by Commissioner Colomarino, a second by Commissioner Ward. And I think the comment that we've made with regards to just the recommendation to look for access to off-site parking, we can just sort of generally make that. Am I correct with both the first and the second of the motion?
Consensus.
Okay.
I think that's kind of a consensus point.
Yes. Commissioner Schmidt.
Is there any consideration for the oak tree between lots 25 and 26 to direct the developer of the project to provide landscaping to protect that tree with subdivision improvements?
I don't propose to amend the motion to cover that. I just
the staff to approve the master plan for landscaping, and it's sufficient for us to let staff know that we're concerned with that.
But that does not include the backyards. Very specifically, there's a condition that says that landscaping in the backyards is the responsibility of the property owners. Mm-hmm. And this particular tree is in the backyards. So there is nothing within the master plan or the landscaping plan that staff is going to purview that addresses that particular tree.
And I think we've got a maker of the motion that is not comfortable with that. How is the second on that issue?
Well, I think it's been moved and seconded. I call the question. Let's vote on it up or down.
All right. We have a call for the question. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
I will vote yes, despite my concerns about the tree. Thank you.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Benz?
Yes.
Yes.
And Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Thank you, Annette. All right. Do we have any commissioner comments or reports? Commissioner Schmidt.
Yeah, having been back in the back room for the second time after being recusing myself, I wish that there might be a Planning Commission coloring book and crayons or something to do back there besides sitting there listening to the
radio. Weren't exciting enough for you? All right.
Get that out early to you because there's a lot of information there. We also expect potentially an amendment to the Rite Aid project across the street from here. They have a new tenant that would like to put in the vacant building. It requires an amendment, so we're working on that as well. Right now, we don't have anything scheduled for December 21st, which is that week right before Christmas, so we are leaning toward canceling that unless we have some high-priority item that comes up instead. In terms of just some project updates, the Walmart EIR is moving forward. We expect the public review draft to be out in January. That will start the 45-day public review period, and then that is basically what needs to be accomplished before it goes to final hearings. So it does need to go to the Planning Commission. You'll be making a recommendation to the City Council. City Council will be making the final decision on that. The Eagle Ranch project, which is also a general plan amendment and annexation, is moving forward as well. We have received 12 proposals to prepare the EIR for that project. We circulated a request for qualifications. We're going to be reviewing those, and we expect the council to be awarding a contract or selecting a consultant to prepare the EIR for that project in January as well. And then there'll be a number of public workshops and meetings between the Planning Commission, City Council, and the direction of that project that we expect to see happen in the first half of next year. So that'll be another big project that's coming your way. And I think that'll conclude my report tonight.
Thank you, Director. And with that, meeting adjourned.